Each year, millions of British people head towards their nearest airport, jumping on a plane in search of sun, sea, and sangria. While the pandemic temporarily stalled travel plans for most of us, it's expected that many will fly again in the coming summer months. Preferred destinations tend to include the European cities, or warmer European destinations, with cheap costs and short flights often being the key reasons why. Benidorm remains one of Britain's favourites, with hundreds of thousands of us taking our holidays there each year. Such is its popularity that it even has its very own sitcom. For Kirsty Maxwell and her friends, it had long been a preferred resort. On the 28th of April 2017, Kirsty and 19 of her friends travelled to the country. Unbeknown to any of them, it was to end in tragedy, with questions that have remained present to this very day. I'm Kay Page, a writer, researcher, and now the co-host of Swindle's Search for the Truth.
I am David Swindle, a former senior investigating officer who has worked in numerous high-profile investigations, murder investigations, cross-border investigations, and dealt with the most complex and tragic cases you can imagine.
On Swindle's Search for the Truth, we will be talking to families whose loved ones have been killed in the UK, Spain, India, Goa, Mexico, and other countries. Kirsty Emma Maxwell, née Curry, was born to proud parents Denise and Brian on the 1st of September 1989 in Leith, Edinburgh. However, when Kirsty was just a child, the family moved to West Lothian, where brother Ryan was eventually born. She attended a school in Livingston, and after gaining educational qualifications, Kirsty worked in various different roles, like most of us do, before landing a position with the Lloyds Banking Group. It was said that her colleagues and peers spoke highly of her, and Kirsty was known to have been a fun, bright and beautiful person. Just 1 year prior to her death, in September 2016, Kirsty married her partner Adam, the couple having been together for 10 years. And at the time when she died, Kirsty and Adam were ready to settle down and have a family. Kirsty was said to have a close-knit group of friends, and it was with many of them whom she'd travelled to Benidorm in April of 2017. It's important to point out here that my primary research for this episode came from the Kirsty Maxwell website, the link of which is always in the show notes alongside the social media profiles. Having arrived in Benidorm and having checked into their apartments in the Pyamar apartment block, the women were ready to head out. And shortly after arriving, wearing matching pink t-shirts, most of the women headed into Benidorm. At 5 a.m, Kirsty and two of her friends returned to the apartment, with the others following shortly after. It's clear from the CCTV of Kirsty entering the lift that she had been drinking, but she was walking by herself, without the support of her friends. Of note is the fact that not all CCTV was seized, nor has it ever been released, one of the numerous concerns that many have with this case. The friends made sure that Kirsty got back to her apartment before heading to their own. The group of 19 was split over numerous different apartments, and so the two friends made sure Kirsty got back to hers before heading to their own. When the other friends did return, Kirsty was said to have been asleep in bed, still wearing the clothes she'd gone out in, much like many of us have done after a good night out. In fact, we have verifiable evidence of this. At 6:50 a.m, one of the girls in the same apartment as Kirsty recorded a video of Kirsty snoring as a joke, and it can be seen in that video that she's sleeping in her clothing. At some point between 6:50 a.m. when the video was recorded and 7:50 a.m. when her body was found by the pool, Kirsty Maxwell had left the apartment. Why Kirsty exited her apartment is one of the many questions that remain, but there are two key theories that make most sense. The first being that Kirsty opened the front door on accident, perhaps thinking that it was the door to the toilet. After all, they'd only just checked into the apartment when they headed out into town, and it was possible that the women hadn't yet familiarised themselves with the apartment's layout. Perhaps Kirsty opened the wrong door before realising when the door slammed shut on her. Without her keycard, having thought she was just popping to the toilet, she'd accidentally found herself locked out. Hotel and holiday lets tend to have heavy front doors, fire doors, and it would be relatively easy for that to happen. Once outside, with her friends asleep inside, perhaps she struggled to get back in. The other theory is that Kirsty had forgotten some kind of toiletry product, with contact lens solution generally being the suggested, and that she went upstairs to ask one of the other friends in her group if she could borrow some. Both of these theories have one commonality, and that is that Kirsty ended up knocking on the wrong door. On the floor above the apartment where Kirsty was staying was another apartment being used by a group of Kirsty's friends. We now know that Kirsty ended up in the apartment next door to the one her friends were staying in, and so the agreed assumption is that she probably just ended up in the wrong one. The apartment in which Kirsty's friends were staying was directly above hers, facing the opposite side to the pool, whereas we know that Kirsty was found by the pool, meaning that she had to have been in an apartment on that side of the building. We now know that Kirsty ended up in an apartment that was not rented by a group of her friends. It was actually being rented by a small group from a larger group of British men. Shortly after entering the wrong apartment, Kirsty fell in circumstances that are still unclear to this day. We don't know why Kirsty mistakenly ended up in that apartment, but we do know that she mistakenly ended up in that apartment. The apartment that Kirsty ended up in faced towards the pool and had a window with sliding doors that had a protective guardrail in front of it. It is from that window that Kirsty fell. Suicide was ruled out pretty quickly in Kirsty's case. After all, she had everything to live for. Having married just a year earlier and being ready to start a family, Kirsty was excited about her future, and the circumstances also didn't match that line of investigation. But neither did murder. Instead, it's the exact circumstances of what happened to her that are the source of the questions here, not how she died. What happened between Kirsty entering the apartment and her death is the source of contention. At 7:50 a.m, Kirsty's body was found poolside, and her friends were told by the police via a knock on the door. Her parents found out via her husband, and from that moment on, none of their lives were ever the same. The investigation into Kirsty's death started pretty quickly, with all those present in the apartment immediately being questioned. But from that point on, the case spiralled, and the investigation was shoddy and poor at best. But following that immediate action, the police investigation has faltered, and to this day, there remains huge criticism over how it was handled. There's plenty of further information about the detail over on the Kirsty Maxwell website, but now it's time to get into the investigation and many of the questions that we still have over what happened to Kirsty. David Swindle first got involved with this case 5 years ago, in 2017, just after Kirsty's death. It was a moment that he still remembers clearly.
There are things that always stick in your mind. In that day at the end of May 2017, when I got a phone call from Kirsty's family, asking if I could assist, is one of those memorable days. When I met Kirsty's family at a place called Falkirk in Scotland, and they started to tell me about all the unanswered questions they had about investigations into Kirsty's death, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. What a sad and upsetting meeting that was, listening to a family who had lost a lovely Kirsty in another country and were struggling to grapple with not only losing her, but trying to understand Spanish processes and translation difficulties with little help from our own government. I found it hard to comprehend why there were so many issues about that Spanish investigation, which did not appear to have been done, and there had been a lot of media reporting, and that in itself had caused Kirsty's family so much stress and concern, so much speculation, and unhelpful speculation. The pressures in Kirsty's family were horrendous. They asked if I could help, and basically I said, I will try.
As we discussed in the previous episode, those whose loved ones die abroad are often faced with incomparable difficulties, and for Kirsty's family, that was undoubtedly true. In many ways, Kirsty's case represents the epitome of what happens when everything goes wrong, when every mistake is made, when an investigation is not conducted properly.
Kirsty's death had happened over a bank holiday weekend, and that may have been the reason for some of the investigative failings,
like the lack of staff and difficulties for the family getting a good lawyer. It happened hundreds of miles away, in another country, with a different language, different legal system. Kirsty's family had not only lost a loved one and were struggling with that, they were struggling with trying to cope with the Spanish system. The British consulate had given Kirsty's family a list of lawyers without any recommendations about their skills. That is something which all British Killed Abroad families have been critical of, and this featured in the 2018 all-party political group to look at consular services and deaths abroad, which Kirsty's local MP, Hannah Burdell, had chaired and continues to drive. Kirsty's family managed to get to a Spanish lawyer who answered his phone that holiday weekend. But a year later, he resigned from the case, leaving the family to continue to push for things through the courts themselves with the help of a Spanish-speaking team, mainly Eva Navarro, who resides in Alicante near Benidorm, where Kirsty died.
Ultimately, it was left to Kirsty's parents to search for answers. And as impossible as that might sound, and as hard as that is to imagine, it fell to them to essentially conduct their own investigation.
Yes, sadly, that's what happened with our team managing to get the case file, make our own inquiries, and do reports in Spanish for Kirsty's family to share with the court, who we hoped would direct the police what to do. One thing listeners may not be aware of is the Spanish legal system is not like in the UK. The system's judge-led, with a judge directing all actions of the police. And that judge is in charge of investigations, and that was the case with Kirsty's case. The Benidorm police said they had finished investigations that weekend that Kirsty died, and would only do anything instructed by the judge. They do not appear to follow up inquiries as would happen in the UK. It was not until October 2018 when my colleague Eva Maria Navarro, the Spanish-speaking colleague who lives locally, managed to secure a good Spanish lawyer, Lorena Sola Bernabeu. It was only then that Kirsty's family managed to get some traction as regards her submissions to the court for things to be done. It was terrible that so many things have not been done, and terrible that despite submissions by Lorena, the Spanish lawyer, with expert evidence that we had obtained, independent experts and witness testimonials, that the Spanish courts still refuse to address requests for potential evidential opportunities to be progressed.
I'm sure that you, like me, will have come to expect a different standard of policing, perhaps because of what we see in terms of investigations within the United Kingdom. After all, despite their well-known failings and issues, British police are, for the most part, effective at what it is that they are tasked to do. And so we've come to expect a certain standard of how things are done. Men and women in hazmat suits with metal plates to prevent footwear contamination, and uniformed police officers guarding entryways to scenes. Yet much of this was missing from the Spanish investigation, but these were only a few of the failings present in this case. As an example, having been told by police that there had been an accident, Kirsty's friends were able to see her body alongside the pool. It hadn't been covered in any way. In the UK, you'd normally see one of those white tents erected, until they were confident they'd dealt with all of the forensic evidence. Those renting the apartment from which she fell were also allowed to remain there, with the scene having not been as protected as you might expect.
Where do I start with this? There were irretrievable errors made and evidence lost. There is no doubt about that. The Spanish police dealt with this as a potential homicide. However, they did not initiate major crime investigation protocols as we would expect in the UK. The first 48 hours, sometimes referred to as the golden hour, is the most important time in any major investigation to secure potential evidence. There were so many errors with the police and authorities not securing evidence, like CCTV, forensic evidence to the extent of destroying the clothing worn by Kirsty without examining it for DNA. In fact, it took the Spanish authorities 9 months to provide an update about the destruction of Kirsty's clothing. And that was only because of Kirsty's family's persistence and the media and social campaign tagging in quotes like, "Donde esta ropa?" Where is the clothing? It was only as a result of continual pressure by Kirsty's family. And that theme has continued right through the investigations. And sometimes there's a phrase, if you don't ask, you don't get. I'm sure true crime followers will be aware of Locar's exchange principle of every contact leaves its trace. Destroying Kirsty's clothing without examining it for DNA was a major failing. It was a flawed investigation with so many things not done. The police initiated inquiries to trace witnesses at the nearby Hotel Presidente Hotel, but did not follow that through. They didn't follow through the inquiries that they identified as potential lines. They didn't interview all of Kirsty's friends at the time, and they didn't interview other residents staying at My Pretty Palma Apartments, where Kirsty died. CCTV footage that was secured was selective. There were cameras in that place which would have helped piece things together better. As it is very, very confusing to work out exactly what happened. In other cases that have been mentioned in the trailer, in fact, by Sana Kuta, the aunt of Felix Dahl, who died in Goa in circumstances believed to be a potential homicide. The initial crime scene management was not good and evidence was lost. The Spanish authorities say it was an unfortunate accident. However, as a former SIO, I really can't understand how they can say that if they haven't followed up all potential evidential opportunities.
Are you thinking about starting a podcast, launching a YouTube channel, or repurposing your old blog content? Then I have the podcast just for you. Hi, I'm Crystal Prophet, host of the Prophet Podcast. And as a content creator, I know firsthand what it's like to feel confused and overwhelmed with everything you could or should be doing. So join us every week as we strip down those processes and take all of that overwhelm away. We'll talk about the strategies I use to help creators start, launch, and market their content with confidence. If that sounds like something you're on board with, then click the link in the show notes and follow the Prophet Podcast today.
Destruction is, by its very nature, final, and it's impossible to go back to where the investigation would have once been. The lack of protection around the scene and the destroying of Kirsty's clothing are just two examples of frustrations that continue to taint this case.
What happened has happened. To coin a popular phrase of today, it is what it is. The dignified attitude of Kirsty's family is not to dwell on the feelings, but to try and move forward and try and influence authorities into pursuing lines of inquiry to trace witnesses that we know exist. In fairness, I tend to agree. There is no point in dwelling whilst it is sad what happened. There is no point in dwelling and continually reflecting on the irretrievable errors that they made. It's much better to try and focus on the evidential opportunities which still exist, let witnesses not traced, and what else can be done legally. Kirsty's family have been determined to keep pushing and pushing and pushing to try and get progress. They have been involved in TV documentaries and continue to be media friendly, and we have the half and good support from the media. Yes, there's been a lot of media speculation and a lot of unhelpful speculation, not based in evidence, I shall say, But the attitude of Kirsty's family is to remain dignified and take things as they are and keep hoping and pushing that progress will happen and they will get the truth someday.
Next week, you'll hear from Kirsty's parents themselves as they appeal for the information that could redirect the investigation. But throughout my research, one thing was clear, and that is that Kirsty's family still believe the answers are possible.
Kirsty's family just want the truth about what happened and to know that everything has been done and get explanations and transparency for decisions that were made and why certain things happened. That has not been forthcoming for the family. Yes, there's a distance involved, there's confusion perhaps regarding stuff lost in translation, and sometimes with the distance involved, it is out of sight and out of mind. I do ask the question, if Kirsty's family lived in Spain, would this have been different? As it stands just now with so many unanswered questions, lines of inquiry not having been done, and the courts and transients regarding evidential requests by the lawyer, it is difficult for Kirsty's family to accept that this has been a transparent and thorough investigation. And I think anyone listening to this podcast with their experience of criminal investigations and their interest in crimes would agree that there's a lot of issues that have not been done by the Spanish authorities. In addition to the refusal to address evidential requests, there's been a continual refusal by the owner of Palma Apartments to allow Kirsty's family or the legal team to visit the scene. That would help the family better understand what happened. It would help the legal team understand better what happened, and it would help the experts that Kirsty's family have engaged, independent experts that they have engaged. The question I ask is, why not allow a family or their team to visit the police with a loved one so tragically died? I can't believe why. Why not let them and the legal team visit that? There doesn't seem to be any review process or any accountability in Spain. Explanations from the authorities regarding why there's been such refusals in meetings between the authority decision makers and Kirsty's family would help. That's all they're asking for, is a meeting, an explanation and an assurance that everything has been done.
At the time of recording this episode, the 5-year anniversary of Kirsty's death has only just passed. And in terms of an investigation, that's a really long time. True crime fans will be well aware of how important time is to any case, with answers becoming less and less likely as the time passes. As David himself just said, the first 48 hours are said to be the most important, with each day after that fact making a solution more and more unlikely. And yet over the past few years, there has been a huge increase in the number of cold cases that are finally being resolved, with some even calling this the season of justice. In fact, it is something that is now happening on an almost daily basis. On the day of recording this podcast episode, authorities in America announced that they had finally solved the famed Girl Scout murders, a case where 3 young girls were murdered, with a key suspect having never been convicted due to a lack of evidence. That was until now, in 2022, when DNA has finally proven that the police had been right all along. Unfortunately, the suspect died in prison, having been convicted of another crime. But the families now know what happened. In Kirsty's case, there is an overwhelming lack of physical or forensic evidence, partly due to the nature of the case and partly due to police failings. The same principle applies to any crime, any case, and of any nature. It is possible to get answers long after the fact. As a result, any breakthrough in Kirsty's case is likely to come from humans, the witnesses and people who may have saw what happened.
You have heard me saying this quite a few times, and it is something I have maybe been accused of repeating and continually repeating in true crime programmes when speaking about historical cases. The passage of time should not be detrimental to the detection of crime. Allegiances change over time between people that may be withholding information because they're loyal to others or they've got fear from people that they're close to at that time. There's a transient nature of the tourist trade in Benidorm, people going on holidays, people working there just for the season. And that could mean that people who were there in Benidorm when Kirsty died have returned home, not realising what they know is relevant. The Supreme Court has refused the family's lawyers' requests for what we consider are fairly basic lines of inquiry, like tracing witnesses and a court order to instruct a hotel to provide details of persons who may have witnessed the incident. Yes, as time passes, people's recollections fade. However, it was 5 years last week that Kirsty sadly died, and there was a lot of activity on social media regarding appeals. And the encouraging thing was that people have responded saying they were on holiday in Benidorm that weekend that Kirsty died. They remember it. Unfortunately, no one has come forward yet to say that they have information which could assist. But Kirsty's family continue to hope that that will happen and continue to appeal and push for information. We hope that by the social media campaign and by the media interest in the case and the helpful media interest in the case, people that were in Benidorm that weekend when Kirsty died and have information come forward to assist. We have a dedicated confidential email address, and anybody that comes forward with information, I can assure you, it will be treated. And it's that old phrase that you hear, in confidence. I can assure you that if someone contacts us or Kirsty's family, we have ways to protect the identity and make sure that information is treated in confidence. The email address is info@kirstymaxwell.com. So there's various things that I'm speaking about in the podcast, and when you also look at the website, www.kirstymaxwell.com, you'll understand the issues that Kirsty's family are grappling with and what they're trying to find out. So please, anything at all, contact either direct message, social media, or the dedicated confidential info@kirstymaxwell.com. There's been a lot of social media activity. However, people at the English couple at the Hotel Presidente who were checking out that morning may only read newspapers and be totally unaware that information that they have could be.
And so despite the passage of time, it is possible that Kirsty's parents could finally get the answers they want. As is being proven time and time again, all it takes is for the right piece of evidence to come forward, for the right person to see the right appeal for information. As David alluded to, there are still people in this case who have yet to give their evidence, and it's those who might have the final pieces of the puzzle. Chief amongst these is the Hotel Presidente that David just mentioned, where there could be a number of key witnesses, particularly an English couple. The hotel itself is a large complex and stands directly opposite the apartment from which Kirsty fell. We know for a fact that there were definitely witnesses within the hotel, people who saw what happened but have yet to give their evidence. Due to failings in the investigation, the information has never been gathered, and so the pieces of the puzzle that they hold have never been revealed.
Hotel Presidente has potential evidential significance from a few aspects. Lots of rooms at Hotel Presidente overlook the pool where Kirsty was found dead. Some of these rooms have direct line of sight into room 10E of Palmer Apartments, where Kirsty was before she died. The English couple is one Presidente line of inquiry not progressed by the police or the courts. That came about as a result of inquiries by Susan Terrace, who is one of our Spanish-speaking review team. Susan is a former Scottish detective. There was a telephone number that we had, and that number was in the case file. And incidentally, the police in Spain do disclose case files and the police files. So we have had an element of disclosure, good disclosure, I would say. And in that case file, there was a telephone number. And Susan made inquiries and traced the person that made that call. It was a cleaner or housekeeper at Hotel Presidente. She'd made a call to the emergency services that morning that Kirsty was found dead. Susan took a statement from the housekeeper. It was in Spanish, but Susan fortunately speaks fluent Spanish. It's a very, very interesting statement. The housekeeper speaks, gives a version of events about an English-speaking couple checking out their room that morning. The bank holiday weekend. The couple alerted the housekeeper to the body of a woman lying beside the Palmer Apartments pool. The housekeeper says that she tried to attract the attention of the uniformed police at the scene. She was shouting down at them. It was the uniformed officers that were protecting the scene, guarding the scene where Kirsty was found. The officers didn't bother with her, so she decided to phone the emergency services number. That couple have never been interviewed. Just to confirm that it was the bank holiday weekend of Saturday, the 29th of April 2017, the couple were checking out their hotel that morning. It was a changeover day at the Hotel Presidente, as Saturday tends to be. The Hotel Presidente management, yes, they confirmed they have details of the people that stayed at the room the housekeeper referred to. But they said they were unable to provide personal details due to data protection issues. And the court later agreed and refused to instruct inquiries to be made by the police. All Kirsty's family are asking is that the court instruct the police to make further inquiries to trace this couple that told the housekeeper that they saw Kirsty's body beside the pool. What else did they see? Did they see anything else? We don't know that.
It's not just that couple in Hotel Presidente that might hold answers to this case. And in fact, there's evidence to suggest there might be more than one source of information within Hotel Presidente.
Oh yes, this is something which is featured from very early on when we became involved, the review team became involved. We launched the website and social media appeals in Kirsty's name. And very quickly, we started to receive messages from English people that were on holiday at Hotel Presidente saying that there were uniformed police officers standing at Palmer Apartments pool after Kirsty had died. And that there were groups of people shouting from their windows. This is the windows and balconies at Hotel Presidente, gesticulating to these uniform officers with their hands, indicating that someone had been climbing down the building. That was the Palmer Apartments building. The people were shouting in a language which was not English, and the people in social media believed they could be Spanish. We published on social media various appeals, and you can see these appeals and the posters of what was described. We published all that on social media with photographs that were taken by these potential witnesses, the English-speaking potential witnesses, and we ringed where we believe the residents were staying that were gesticulating. This links into information which was provided by one of the men, one of the English men that was in room 10E when Kirsty died. He said that people from Hotel Presidente Hotel were shouting when the fatal incident happened. This perhaps confirms, the independent version of events that we got on social media. The police did make some inquiries to trace people, and that indicates they had a reason to do so because they had that information from the men. And they started that investigation at the hotel, but they didn't seem to finish that. Reports were submitted to the court by Lorena Bernabeu, the Spanish lawyer, in November 2018. And during her submissions and subsequent appeals, because everything that she asked for was refused. What she was asking for basically was an order from the court to the police, instructing them to make inquiries to trace the English couple and the people who were gesticulating from the balconies of Hotel Presidente. That has continually been refused. Why have the Spanish court refused requests by the lawyer and Kirsty's family for information about potential witnesses? Why have they not instructed the police to interview the potential witnesses who were guests at Hotel Presidente, in particular that English couple that saw Kirsty's body? Oh yes, definitely there's people at Presidente who stayed at Presidente that weekend, bank holiday weekend, the 29th of April 2017, that have information which could assist. It could assist to better establish the truth. That's why the Kirsty information appeal continues to be active in social media, and why Kirsty's family continue to push through the lawyer for people who stayed at Hotel Presidente the bank holiday weekend, 29th of April 2017, to make contact. We have published appeals in English and Spanish without success. It might be that the English couple and the people gesticulating from their balconies who have returned home are not aware of our need to speak to them. Just to confirm again, an English couple checking out of the room on the 9th floor of Hotel Presidente, Benidorm, Spain, on the morning of Saturday the 29th of April 2017, saw Kirsty's body and spoke to the housekeeper. If this is you or someone you know, please contact us.
And then all of a sudden, Facebook got in there very cleverly, and they gave people free phones, which they couldn't afford anyway, with Facebook built into it. And now all of a sudden, the world's opening up. And of course, you're going to believe what you see on this amazing technology.
Right.
And they were warned over and over again that this was being misused in order to prosecute a genocide on the part of extreme Buddhists and the government.
Right.
The UN actually said that Facebook had facilitated a genocide in Myanmar. And what happened to them? Nothing.
At some point while Kirsty was inside of the mistaken apartment, a woman was seen with some of the group whom were renting the apartment in which Kirsty had ended up. For the first time, David Swindle is now able to reveal more information about this possible witness.
The police didn't interview everyone who stayed at Palma Apartments. And just to clarify the spelling of that, it's P-A-Y-M-A. It's Palma Apartments, My Pretty Palma Apartments, or Apartmentos Palma. It is popular with British holidaymakers, indeed holidaymakers of various nationalities. It would be expected for such a serious incident as the police were dealing with, that they would interview everyone in the apartments and make every line of inquiry that they could do to try and find out what happened. However, sadly, this did not happen. They did not make such inquiries. They did not interview everyone. They did not interview the group of Englishmen and obtained statements, or as the Spanish call them, declarations, and they did not interview all of Kirsty's friends. Basically, we are still, despite the passage of time, despite the fact it was 5 years ago, we're still keen to speak to everyone who stayed there that bank holiday weekend of the 29th of April 2017. So if you or someone you know stayed there at the Palma apartments, or Apartmentos Palma in Benidorm, contact us, contact the dedicated info at Kirsty Maxwell email address or us on social media. One person of particular interest is a woman who was with a group of Englishmen who stayed at my Pretty Palma apartments. This is someone that we believe only stayed there for one night. And it's someone that may have been able to provide information independent of others. But sadly, her identity and testimony is not available. Who is the woman? We don't actually know who the woman is. There's so much confusing regarding that. But she did exist, because the men speak about her, and the police confirmed that they did speak to her in the passing. The police told Kirsty's family she was, in quote, she was not English and not Spanish and not important, unquote. They said she had nothing to add to the case. She, as far as I'm concerned, from a senior investigating officer point of view, everyone should have been interviewed. This is a woman who is independent of the others, like Kirsty's friends and the Englishmen. And she was on the same floor as where Kirsty was before she sadly died. And she was in the company of a group of Englishmen. Kirsty's lawyer, Lorena, that's the Spanish lawyer, Lorena, she arranged for the Englishmen to be interviewed in court. That was sometime later, it was in November 2018. And she asked about various issues, including the woman who was with their group. Contrary to what the police said, one of the Englishmen said the woman was English and went to the police with everyone when the police were making inquiries. There's definitely confusion about the identity of this woman. If she went to the police office with the men, she would have been on the CCTV footage at the entrance and exit to the apartments. However, as has been mentioned earlier and in various social media platforms, sadly, none of the relevant CCTV footage has been secured. We don't know who was coming and going in apartments. We don't know who's moving around the corridors, apart from the small bits of CCTV footage, which is showing sightings of Kirsty and her friends arriving at apartments and the men going to reception after the incident happened. There is no other CCTV footage, sadly. It has gone, despite efforts to trace it and to make inquiries with it, if it was still held on drives. It is not available. They were selective in retaining it. Perhaps the power of social media and this podcast might help to trace this woman. She's important. So, if anyone listening to the podcast has information about a woman who was with a group of Englishmen at my Pretty Palma apartments, also known as Apartmentos Palma, in the what's called the English area of Benidorm, Spain, on the bank holiday weekend of the 29th of April 2017, when a young woman tragically died, please make contact. And in confidence, as we keep saying, contact us in confidence. We have the dedicated email. We have various mediums where we can be contacted on social media. And if you stayed at these apartments that weekend, that bank holiday weekend, the 29th of April 2017, please contact us, as you might have something. It might not be something that you think is significant, but it will help us piece together what happened to Kirsty Maxwell and get the truth for her family. Indeed, the truth for everyone that's involved here. And that's what they need. Various lines of inquiry that are still outstanding to be progressed.
Having spent the past 5 years working on the case, I wanted to know what David Swindle really thought about what had happened.
I would say the best briefing tool regarding Kirsty's case is the website www.kirstymaxwell.com. Particularly what happened in key facts sections, as they give details of what we know. And that is confusing, but the basic facts are there about what happened. Kirsty and her friends had only checked into the apartments the previous night about 9 p.m. with a group staying in various rooms, including the 10th floor near to the room where Kirsty fell from. We know from video footage taken by one of Kirsty's friends that she was sleeping and snoring at 6:50 a.m. that morning, and within an hour she was dead, falling from apartment 10A. A UK biometrics, and that's a fall expert, Mike Brown from the Midlands in England, has established that Kirsty was facing into the building and appears to have been climbing down from room 10A. What actually happened in that room? Was she frightened? There is information from Kirsty's friends submitted to the court and a lot of speculation as to what may have happened. However, there's a lack of corroborative evidence. There's a lack of evidence and so many unanswered questions and a flawed investigation, meaning the truth is not known. Hopefully, as a result of the podcast, this will be forthcoming. More information will help piece together what may have happened.
In a case like Kirsty's, it would be easy to focus on what went wrong, but it's also important to highlight that there are reasons to still hope for answers. After all, there are still people who might have contributions to offer, and there are opportunities for answers to be gained still. Next week, our investigation into Kirsty's case continues as we speak to Denise. I think that you, as true crime listeners and a community, can do to help them in their search for the truth. The hope is that much like other cases where the right piece of evidence or the right person could lead to resolution, this podcast can help that happen in Kirsty's case. It's not a lot to ask, and with the internet permeating everyone's lives, it's something we should all be able to do. Kirsty's family live in the hope of finding the truth. Kirsty's story is a tragedy. She was a young woman with her entire life ahead of her, and if this podcast achieves even one good thing, let it be that we finally find those witnesses. There are people out there with the information that can help the family get answers. For you, as the listener, there are a few simple things that you can do to help. Share Kirsty's story with your friends on social media or in person. Start conversations with friends who holiday in Benidorm. Leave us a review to help push this podcast up the true crime charts, meaning that even more people will see it. Or simply share this episode online. In this instance, this is a case that you could actually help to solve. And in many ways, that's the entire point of the true crime business. Our business is seeking answers. After all, it only takes one of those witnesses to hear our appeal, or for a friend who's been told this story to make the connection. And those direct witnesses could come forward.
So please follow the Swindle Search for the Truth with Kay Page and I, and our various hosts and contributors. To keep up to date and see what's happening with Swindle Search for the Truth regarding the live investigations, the new experts, subscribe to the podcast and click on the various icons and access the various social media platforms. There's going to be a lot going on.